Today's presentation is the first of four that Joe Kissel will be giving on the topic of working with your iPad. Joe is one of the best-known names in the world of Apple writers, thanks to his contributions to Tidbits, his articles for Macworld, and his best-selling Take Control ebooks. I've worked with Joe for closing in on a decade now, and I can say with assurance that he's one of the top technology writers in the business, largely due to his meticulous research and unwillingness to publish anything until it's just right. Well, we don't have that luxury with Take Control Live. But Joe's technical expertise and amiable style has also made him a sought-after person for talks at conferences such as Macworld Expo and the Mac Mania Cruises, and he's given innumerable presentations to Macintosh user groups around the globe. Before I turn this over to Joe, a few housekeeping notes. You are viewing this presentation live. Please use the live chat box to ask questions or make comments, which we'll address at the end, time permitting. A lovely and talented Tanya Angst will be monitoring the chat during the presentation, and she'll rephrase questions as necessary, but please try to keep them concise. Remember, too, that you do not have to take notes, because we'll update the season pass with full notes about everything that Joe says, complete with links to every product. Look for email with the update shortly after the presentation. Should there be technical difficulties, sit tight and reload the page for information about what's going on. In the unlikely event of something going horribly wrong and forcing us to reschedule, we'll send email with the new details. Without further ado, then, I give you Joe Kissel. Please give him back when you're done. Joe?
Thank you, Adam. And hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me here. Those of you who are watching live, hello right now. And those of you who are watching the recorded version, nice to have you here, too. So, I'm very happy to be doing this. This is a little bit of an experiment for us. I want to just briefly apologize for the surroundings. The lighting isn't great here. The acoustics aren't good here. And the wall behind me is kind of boring. I'm going to be moving out of my apartment in 4 days, moving to another country. So I'm sorry that I don't quite have good stuff here. I'm going to do my very best to give you good content that will make up for the lack of beauty. And I will get right on that beauty thing as soon as I get to my new home. All right, so I'm really glad that you're all here to learn more about working with your iPad. Today's topic, I called it the three R's because, of course, as everyone learns incorrectly in elementary school, the three R's are reading, writing, and arithmetic. Now, I think a more modern sort of techie formulation of that might be word processing, spreadsheets, and presentations. But what they both have in common is that they're all about words and numbers. So to get almost any kind of work done, to do almost anything, period, with your iPad or with any computer, you have to have a grip on some of the fundamentals, working with words and numbers. So all the stuff we cover today is going to involve words and numbers in some fashion. Hopefully we'll get a little bit beyond the basics, but they're really important things about doing all sorts of work with your iPad. Now, I've used this word work a couple of times already, and you may be wondering what I mean by the word work, because it's a sort of, you know, plastic term that could mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Well, first of all, when I say work, let me tell you what I do want to include. Things that would happen ordinarily in an office setting or in a studio with a computer. So anything that you would have done 3 or 4 years ago with your computer to earn a living is fair game. Now, of course, that's still pretty broad, and I don't want to, and you know, I don't have the time or the expertise to cover everything. I want to mention a few things in particular that I'm not going to cover in this series. So I'm not going to be talking about consuming media, watching movies, listening to music, reading books. Your iPad is, of course, great at doing all those things. I'm not going to talk about them. I'm not going to talk about playing games. I'm not going to talk about taking photos or managing photos. Again, that's something that iPads are great at. It's not what I'm here to talk about. I'm not going to talk about casual web surfing, although we will get into some less than casual things a little bit later. And I'm also not going to talk about email. Now, of course, email is totally central to my work life and probably to yours, too. The thing is, I have a whole book about email on iOS devices. So whether you're using an iPad or an iPhone or an iPod Touch for email, I have a whole book on that subject, and because there's so much to say about it, I don't want to take up time in these presentations with that. I'll refer you to that book. And last but not least, I'm not going to tell you about the basics. So from a couple of questions that I had by email in the last couple of weeks, I sense that some people might be wondering about how to do sort of fundamental things with their iPad, how to sync it, how to set up iCloud, how to arrange apps into folders, and those are very important things that everyone should know how to do, and you'll need to know how to do them in order to do work. But those two are outside the scope of what I'm going to talk about. Tanya Angst has a wonderful book on all those sorts of basics, and there are many other ways that you can find out how to do those things. We're going to start this set of presentations and sort of a notch or two above that. I'm going to assume you know the basics, and we're going to talk about how to be productive with your iPad. Now, a question that I have heard a lot, and that I know a lot of people are really seeking an answer to, a really definitive answer, is this one. Can an iPad substitute for a laptop? Well, you know, maybe I only have a certain amount of money and I have to buy one or the other, or I really want to know if I can feel safe leaving my laptop at home while I go on a business trip and only take my iPad with me. So I want to, in a somewhat koan-ish way, answer this question with a question. And that question is, can your computer substitute for a TV? Now, let's think about all the different ways you can watch TV shows on a computer. I mean, you can stream things off of the iTunes store. You can download TV shows from a whole bunch of different places. You can watch on Netflix and Hulu and individual streaming sites. You can, if your Mac is old enough to still have a DVD player, you know, you can pop a DVD in. There are so many ways you can get TV content on a computer. And of course, your computer can do all kinds of things that a TV can't. So one answer to that is, hey, yeah, a computer makes a great substitute for a TV. It's more versatile and it's more portable. A different answer is, if you're sitting on the sofa with your family and you want to watch the local news live, your computer might be a terrible thing to substitute for a TV. You want a bigger screen, you want a remote control, you want a tuner card, and by the time you add all that stuff to your Mac, you've gone to far too much effort to get that effect. So basically, your iPad, it's the same story. It depends. For some people, honestly, the amount of effort that you would have to go through to make your iPad substitute for a laptop just isn't worth it. And I'm not going to try to sugarcoat that and say, you know, everybody should just give up their laptops and use an iPad instead. Not at all. On the other hand, there are some respects in which your iPad is even a better tool for work than a laptop would be. So what are some of those ways? Well, the biggest thing for me is, I mean, it's small, it's lightweight, you can take this anywhere. I can take this and use it in places that I would never think about using a laptop. And not just because of the size and the weight, but because of the configuration. I mean, I can hold this in one hand, and I can use it with my other hand. It's very awkward to walk around while carrying a laptop, you know, balancing and trying to type. It's scary, and it's just not fun. So because I can use this in more places and more situations, that makes it an excellent work tool. Now, in addition, it has a longer battery life than almost any laptop, and you can put it on your lap and not have to worry that you will singe your legs, as you know, sometimes happens even with MacBook Pros. But wait, there's more. It has this great multi-touch display. So of course, your laptop might have a multi-touch trackpad, and that's great. But the thing about the display is that you can manipulate objects directly. You only have to use OmniGraffle on an iPad versus a Mac to see, you know, example of how great it is to be able to do that sort of thing. Not just, you know, pinching and swiping and having that action take place someplace else, but actually, you know, I want to manipulate this right here. For certain kinds of work, that can make a huge difference. You also have a couple of cameras. Now, obviously, there's one in front that's used for FaceTime, and one in back that you can use to take much higher res pictures of all kinds of things, could be useful for work. I'm not going to talk about pictures, just mentioning it. Now, these other doodads, these gadgets, you know, the accelerometer, the gyroscope, the digital compass, the GPS, for office kinds of work, those might be completely irrelevant. If you are an architect, or a surveyor, or a home inspector, or I can think of lots of different occupations where those sorts of things could be incredibly useful. I mean, I have a digital level app on my iPad so that when I'm hanging pictures, I can use it as a level. That's a really nice thing to be able to do. And of course, if you have an iPad that has a cellular radio, you can use it in and get, you know, internet access in places that you would not be able to get that with a laptop. All that said, no matter how great the iPad is, and despite all the apps and accessories that I'm going to talk about today and in the next three sessions, I have to be honest, there are some reasons that you may still need a laptop either to supplement your iPad or instead of an iPad. And the most basic one is really simple. What if you don't have the apps that you need in a native iPad version? Now, in the third show, in a couple of months, I'll be talking about some ways that you can slightly cheat, that you can actually run full Windows apps and full Mac apps on an iPad, but it's cumbersome and it's a little bit fragile, and it's something that's okay if you need to do it just occasionally, but it's not great to do as a regular thing. So if you need to run apps that just don't exist in the iOS world, that would be one reason. Another reason, of course, is the screen just is too small. Now, I normally work with a 27-inch iMac and a second 27-inch display. And believe me, I fill up every square inch of both of those displays with stuff that I want to see all the time. So having only one display that's rather small can be kind of limiting for certain kinds of work. And finally, if you mostly do typing, then despite what we're going to spend about the next 7 minutes talking about, the iPad might not be the best tool. Yes, you certainly can type on a virtual or physical keyboard and get your text into an iPad, but if that's mainly what you're doing, you will probably be happier with something that has a dedicated built-in keyboard. Now, I want to talk just for a moment about the iPad Mini, because that's the latest coolness from Apple. And I got to say that the iPad Mini is sweet. I love the size of it. I would be happier, much happier, if it had a Retina display, because I love Retina displays. I'm over pixels. I don't ever want to see a pixel again. So when the iPad Mini finally gets that Retina display, I'll be so happy. Now, it has specifications similar to an iPad 2. So basically, if I'm going to tell you that there's some work activity that you can do on an iPad 2, I would have to say you can also do that on an iPad Mini. It can run the same apps. It can use most of the same accessories. Sure, why not? Well, I just want to call your attention to two things. These, your hands. Your hands together are wider than an iPad Mini is long. That means that if you're typing on the virtual keyboard on screen, you're going to have to go like this. You might have to do hunting and pecking, you might have to do thumb typing, or you might have to just do this, but it's not going to be easy and it's not going to be very fast. Of course, you can add an external keyboard, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but then you have to carry around an external keyboard, and by the time you've done that, you've eliminated a lot of the advantage of the iPad Mini's small size. There's also the screen. Hey, it has the same number of pixels as an iPad 2, so that's no problem, but if you're doing something that's very detailed, you know, a big spreadsheet or something that requires a lot of high resolution, you might have to hold it closer to your face to be able to see what's going on, and that could just make it a little bit more awkward to do work. So I'm not going to tell you you can't use an iPad Mini for work. Of course you can, but you may have some hurdles to overcome that are less difficult with a full-size iPad. Now, as I said, I'm going to spend a chunk of this first talk talking about text. And you might almost get the impression I'm a little bit obsessed about text. I kind of talk about text a lot, not just here, but kind of in all of my books. I really like text. Of course, I work with words for a living. That's what I do. I write. So I'm going to be a little obsessed about text. But the thing is, almost all kinds of work, whether you're writing letters or reports or entering data into a spreadsheet or doing web browsing or whatever, almost everything involves text. Text is such a fundamental work app activity, and yet the biggest difference between an iPad and a laptop is that lack of a hardware keyboard. So if you can't get over that hurdle, if you can't bridge that gap between what the iPad has and what you're used to, you're going to have a hard time being productive at work. So to explain why I'm obsessing a little bit about text, to me, that is the biggest reason I might not choose an iPad and the biggest thing I have to adapt to. So let's talk about text. To start with, I want to show you some things about the virtual keyboard that so that if you're using that, you can be a little bit more effective and more productive than you might otherwise be. Whoops. Here, let's get out of there. I'm just going to go into Apple's Notes app, and I'm going to tap here to bring up... Yes, you can see I was typing nonsense in an earlier version of this presentation. All right. So I'm just going to tap here to bring up the on-screen keyboard. Now, there are a few tips that I've seen on lots of websites. You may know these already. They're not secrets, but I find them very helpful and very cool. And if you don't already know them, I want to make sure that you're aware of them. So one quick thing is if you're typing along and you type two spaces, you get a period and a space. I use this trick all the time. It saves time, it saves effort, it saves, it's more accurate. Two spaces gives you a period and a space automatically. Next, I want to type an apostrophe, and normally I'd have to go here to this special second keyboard to type an apostrophe, but that's a little bit cumbersome. So if I want to type Joe's, like Joe apostrophe S, I can type Joe, and then I'm going to slide upward on the comma key, like so. There we go. So touch and slide up to get the apostrophe. And you can touch and slide up here on the period and question mark key to get quotation marks. So that just saves you switching to the other keyboard and switching back if you want apostrophe or quotation marks. As you probably know, if you need to type a letter that contains accents or special characters, you can touch a letter that's close to it and hold and get the other options. So for example, if I want to say mañana, and that N has an ñ, so I just touch and hold on the N key, slide up to the N, get the little tilde. There you go. And you can do that with almost every character that can have an accent mark on it. All the vowels, the various accents. And in the PDF that you'll be able to download after this session, I have a table that lists not only the simple ones, but like the weird punctuation and how you get, you know, an M dash and a bullet character and an ellipsis character and things like that by touching and holding certain keys. So that's a really nice thing to know. Now, normally if you have your iPad in landscape mode like this and you have it sitting on a desk or a table, you can just type on it like a normal keyboard. But what if you're holding it in two hands like this or like this? In that kind of situation, excuse me, might be more comfortable to type with your two thumbs. So on this lower right hand key, you can touch and slide upwards. And that separates the keyboard into two halves. And now you can just type with two thumbs. Now, when you are in this split keyboard arrangement, you might notice something that I noticed right away. Now, I learned touch typing in eighth grade. And my left hand knows that it has to be the one that's responsible for typing the letter B. The letter B is done with the index finger of the left hand. And I can't think about it. If I can't do that, I can't type the letter B. It doesn't work. But look at this keyboard. The B is split onto the right side. What could Apple have been thinking? Didn't they take typing class in eighth grade? Well, as it turns out, they put some hidden, invisible phantom keys in there. So if I touch right, whoopsie, my aim is a little bit bad. But if I touch right to the right, hopefully you can see where that's hitting, of the letter V, I actually get the B. If I touch right to the right of the G, I get an H. If I type right to the right of the T, I get a Y. And the same thing works on the other side. So basically, there are these invisible phantom keys just to the inside of these two halves of the keyboard. And if you really want to type a B with your left hand, you actually can. You just have to pretend that the key is there, and it's there. And of course, if you want to get back to the regular arrangement, you can just drag this key down to unsplit it. Alrighty, so those are a few of the tips for using a virtual keyboard. But honestly, the virtual keyboard can only get you so far. If you're serious about getting text into your iPad, you're probably going to want to go beyond that. So I'm going to talk about several different ways, besides the virtual keyboard, that you can get text into your iPad. First of all, keyboard overlays. This is the inexpensive, no batteries required, and very portable solution. So you have your iPad in landscape mode, and you can put this little flexible plastic overlay called a TouchFire on it. It sticks to the front of your iPad with magnets, and it gives you a plastic membrane where you can feel the different keys. There's another one called iKeyboard. This one is rigid rather than flexible, but it's the same sort of thing. You can feel where the keys are. You get tactile feedback when you type, and it's just an overlay to provide you the tactile feedback without having to have an external keyboard. So it's a pretty cool idea. Now, if that's not good enough, you can, of course, use an external keyboard. External keyboards give you much easier typing, just the same as on a laptop, the tactile feedback. And importantly for me, they don't cover up half the screen like the virtual keyboard does, so you're not losing that screen real estate. You have much more of the page that you can look at. So And an even better thing is you can use all of the Mac keyboard shortcuts that you're used to, like Command-C for copy and Command-V for paste and Command-Z for undo. All of those and several more will work on an external keyboard. So those are things that you can't get on the virtual keyboard. Now, you can use any Bluetooth keyboard like this with your iPad. It's very easy to pair it. You can also use a USB keyboard. Now, USB keyboards are a little bit more twitchy. First of all, you have to have an adapter. So you either have to have the camera kit for the dock connector or for the lightning connector, depending on which sort of iPad you have. And then you have a USB port. Now, the USB port is supposed to be only used for plugging in your camera, but trust me, you can use it with a keyboard and a few other things too. There's only one catch. And the catch is that some keyboards, notably Apple's full-size USB keyboard, draw too much power and the iPad doesn't put out enough power to support it. So if you happen to have a USB keyboard that needs too much power, the only way to do it is to buy a powered USB hub that plugs into the wall, plug that into the camera connection kit, plug your keyboard into that, and then, yes, it works. Now, I mean, who's really going to do that? I don't know, but you can. I'm just saying you can do it. Now, a lot of enterprising people noticed that if you put a keyboard this size together with an iPad, you could just sort of like close those up into, hey, a product. Yes, let's make a case that contains a Bluetooth keyboard and a nice shell for the keyboard and the iPad together, and then on top of that gives you a little stand. So you know, open off the case and prop the keyboard up to the proper level, and you can type. So there are so many designs. Some of them make the whole contraption look a lot like a MacBook Air. Some of them are a little more, you know, sort of organic and leathery. Some of them are cases. Some of them are folios. But if that's your thing, you can get very close to the overall effect of a laptop by getting one of these cases. Now, of course, Apple makes their own wireless keyboard. Belkin, Logitech, Mac Alley, Zag, and oodles of other manufacturers make keyboards designed specifically for the iPad, as well as keyboard cases and folios. In the PDF, I'll give you a bunch of links, not only to manufacturers, but also to a really nice Macworld article that Dan Frakes wrote a year ago that talks about the different genres of keyboards and cases and reviews quite a lot of the products. So that could be very helpful for you. Just as one example, this is one, I believe this one's made by Belkin. I'm sorry, I've kind of lost track. There are so many. But a nice little leather case for your iPad. It props it up at a nice angle, includes a Bluetooth keyboard, and wraps it all up in a nice protective case. So that's one way. Now, if you want a keyboard, but you want something smaller, and particularly if you have an iPad mini, you might want something that folds. Now, I have one of these. This is a Matthias folding keyboard. It's a Bluetooth keyboard, standard Mac layout. Well, maybe not in the version shown here in this picture, but trust me, it comes in a standard Mac layout. And what's great about this is that it has a full-size numeric keypad, too. So you can use this on a Mac, you can use it on an iPad, an iPhone, whatever. Now, when it folds up, it's not very long, but it's kind of thick. You can take that wherever you want. But just saying, it will fit more easily in a small bag. All right. Now, back to that iPad mini. There are now a whole bunch of manufacturers coming out with little versions of that case keyboard combo size just for the mini. Now, it's great that you can have an external keyboard that's the same size as your iPad mini. Of course, the problem is, again, even though the keys are now tactile and not virtual, they're still spaced really close together. One manufacturer has found an interesting way of dealing with that, and that's Zag. So if you look at these two keyboard cases, these are both by the same manufacturer. The one on the left is a 7-inch model. That's exactly the same width as the iPad mini. The one on the right is a 9-inch model. The 9-inch model, they claim, is 90% of the size of a full size, that is, of this Apple keyboard. And as you can see, it only extends about an inch on either side of the iPad mini. So it's almost a way of having your cake and eating it too. If you have an iPad mini, you want an almost full-size keyboard, but you don't want a lot of extra bulk and weight, that's an option for you. And of course, a keyboard of whatever sort is not the only way of getting text into your iPad. And I should have, of course, mentioned that text is not the only thing you're going to want to get into your iPad. You might also want to get drawings and paintings and other sorts of things. So for that, you might want a stylus. Now, I'm going to talk about apps that use a stylus in just a little bit. In the PDF, you will see a link to a lovely Macworld article by Serenity Caldwell. And she is an artist, and she has almost every iPad stylus that has ever been made. So she has a wonderful review of all these different categories of styli. And there are a few models that either she liked or I liked or both of us liked that I want to just mention here. Again, links in the PDF. This one, the one that's highlighted at the bottom in orange, is a Wacom Bamboo Stylus Solo. I like it because it's the same size as a regular pen. It has a pretty small nib, so it's easy to hold and easy to write with, and it's pretty versatile. I think this is about $30. So if you think you might be writing using, you know, taking notes or doing drawings or handwriting recognition or using some other way of a pencil-like approach to getting stuff into your iPad, a stylus is a good investment. Last but not least, there is dictation. Now, if you are fortunate enough to have an iPad 3, that is a third generation or fourth generation iPad or an iPad mini, you have access to Apple's dictation feature. The iPad I'm using right now to show you this display is an older iPad, so I'm going to switch for just a moment. I'm going to turn off my mirroring here, and I'm going to turn it on over here. I'm using the older iPad because I wanted you to be able to see those spots where I touched the screen. I thought that would be helpful. Unfortunately, I can only show you that on a jailbroken iPad, and there's not yet a way to jailbreak an iPad 3 running iOS 6.0.1. So we will just switch. Alrighty, so I'm in the Notes app again. Oh, I'm not in the Notes app. You can't see it. So, aha. I didn't press the right button. So I'm in the Notes app again. And as long as you have a recent enough iPad, all you do is touch the little keyboard, the microphone button to the left of the space bar, and you speak. Take control of working with your iPad, period. And touch again. And if everything works out correctly, you will see an approximation of what you spoke appear magically on the screen. Now, you're not going to dictate an entire novel with this. You have to dictate in short, like 30 or 40 second chunks, and have them be recognized. It does require an active internet connection too, because the actual recognition is happening on Apple servers. But if you want to be able to take quick notes, maybe when you're in the car or when you don't have both hands free or you don't have your right keyboard, that can be a really great way of doing it. And we will be returning to other forms of text input momentarily. So I'm going to turn this off and turn this back on. If you do not have a newer iPad that supports this feature, you're not out of luck. You can download Dragon Dictation, which is free, and it has really, really good speech recognition. In some ways, it's even better than Apple's. Unfortunately, it doesn't work all throughout your system like Apple's does. You're going to have to, you know, copy and paste some stuff, but it's really not bad at all. And there's also a program called Voice Dictation, and if you do a search in the iTunes App Store, you can find a few others that do this as well. Now, we've talked about the sort of the mechanics of text. You use a keyboard or a keyboard overlay, the virtual keyboard or a stylus or whatever. So that's the mechanics of it, but where do you put it? There are so many different kinds of apps on the iPad that use text, that can be the container where you store it, manage it, manipulate it. And one of the things that I found personally is that if I try to use the wrong sort of app for a particular usage of text, I just don't have good results. I get in all kinds of trouble. So I want to give you sort of my personal way of categorizing apps that involve text. So there are three. The first is note-taking apps. And the next thing I talk about is going to be note-taking, because the iPad is such a great tool for sitting in meetings, and you want to have a record of what's said, but you don't want to have your laptop with you, whether it's a, you know, PTA meeting or a meeting at your corporation or your some other situation where a lot of people are speaking and you want to have either notes to read or notes that you're taking. A classroom, you're taking a class, and again, you don't want the size and clutter and obtrusiveness of a laptop. An iPad is a great thing for taking notes. So when I'm talking about a note-taking app, I'm talking about something that specializes in sort of small snippets. So you have a page or a card or a sheet or some little block that's intended for a rather small amount of text. Might also include drawings, might also include photos, might also include other things, but sort of brief things without a whole lot of embellishment. That's the key. The second category is text editing. Now, this is where you might get into much longer form text. You might be writing an article, a blog entry, even a whole book. But the key is you don't have to worry so much about styles and layout and photos and text wrap and all those kinds of things. You're really dealing mostly with plain text, but you might need to do some more advanced operations on that than a note-taking app. You might need to keep track of your word count. You might need to do a find and replace. You might need to do other sorts of text manipulation activities. Or you might be doing programming, which we'll talk about in a minute. And then the third broad category is word processing. So this is where you need to do all the sorts of things you would do in text editing, but you also need to do the layouts and the styles and add graphics and tables and multiple columns and those sorts of things. Now, of course, these three categories overlap tremendously, but I find it helpful to know, okay, I'm going to a meeting, yeah, I probably want a note-taking app for that. I'm going to write a blog post. I probably feel more comfortable using a text editing app for that. I'm writing a take control book. I'm going to need a word processor. So when you are in note-taking mode, you might use something very simple to type a note, like Apple's Notes app that we've just seen a couple of times. Or if all you're planning on doing is typing, and all you really need in terms of your notes is text, you can use a text editor that we will be talking about shortly, either for plain text or for markdown. Or you can use a multi-purpose note app, and I'll explain what I mean by multi-purpose in a couple of slides. But not all note-taking is typing. In fact, some of the best note-taking isn't. Again, you know, when I'm sitting in a meeting, I feel conspicuous when I have a keyboard on my lap, whether it's an iPad keyboard or something else, and it's clacking away. I don't feel very conspicuous just kind of doing this. And not only that, but when I'm doing, you know, this with a stylus and a pad, I can doodle. I can make diagrams. I can do formulas. I can do kinds of things that would be very, very hard or impossible with a keyboard. So if you have a stylus or at least a finger, because after all, you can use your finger, you might be interested in a type of app that tries to replicate a paper notebook. And there are so many of these. There are lots and lots of these. I've just given you a few examples here. And I'm just going to show you one called Penultimate really quick. As you can see, it's just it's just blank paper. There are a few little icons on the right here. It's nothing very fancy. I think my stylus is sweaty. There we go. So I can write, I can draw pictures, I can do whatever I want. If I want a different color, I can change the color. I can change the thickness of the line, and that's it. That's really all this does. You can erase, you can cut, you can have multiple sheets, and that's it. It's basically a paper notebook in app form. And there are a whole bunch of products like this, and if that's what you want, sort of the sky's the limit. Let me switch back here for a moment. Alrighty. Now, supposing you, that's good, you like sketching, you like writing, but you also want to be able to type when that's appropriate. Maybe you want to be able to add photos, maybe you want to be able to record the audio of the meeting or the lecture. Then you want a multi-purpose note-taking app. Once again, there are so many examples. I picked whatever, 6 or 7 just to show you some examples. These apps do various combinations of the above. Some of them, they offer typing, writing or sketching, audio recording, inserting pictures, and various combinations of the above. They don't all do all of those things, but they all do some combination of them. Now notice, I've marked 3 of them with an asterisk. Those 3 have a very cool feature. You're recording audio. So let's say you're in a class and you're recording the whole class session, everything the teacher says. You're also taking notes. Now you're reviewing your notes later on, and you come to a point where you made some comments like, yeah, I really wish I could jump to exactly that point in the lecture so I know what the teacher was saying then. No problem, you tap that point in your textual notes and the recording starts playing at that point. So those 3 products that I have the asterisk by have that feature. They implement it all slightly differently, but it's a really great way of synchronizing an audio recording with your typed or written notes. Now, unfortunately, none of these will do the same thing with photos that you take or live video. Adam would really like to see an app that does that. He wants to know at what point in the recording did I take this picture or whatever. Keep our fingers crossed. Maybe something like that will come out in the future. Of these, I know that there are a lot of Evernote fans out there, a lot of really heavy-duty Evernote fans, and with all due respect, Evernote's kind of okay for me. It's not my favorite. Circus Pony's notebook is super heavy-duty. It has every bell and every whistle. It's also the most expensive one of these, I'm just going to say. If you want to be sure that nothing is left out, that's the one. Evernote is a good sort of all-purpose choice, and it kind of syncs to everywhere. But I've used most of the rest of these, and they're all good at various things, so take a look at the descriptions, find one that you like. Now, of course, I can write hello as virtual ink on a virtual piece of paper, but what about actual handwriting recognition? Oh, yes, you can do that too, and there are many apps that do that. I have 4 or 5 examples here. I'm going to just quickly show you one of them, which is WritePad. So WritePad is right there. Yes, and you can see that I forgot to erase what I was doing in the practice session, but if I write take control, then a second later, you'll see that at the beginning there, where my insertion point happened to be, it inserted take control. Now, I have to admit that the quality of handwriting recognition in this app is sort of, it's better than the Newton. It's better than the Newton. It's not fantastic. It should give you a general idea of what you are writing. But, you know, typed text, you can search, you can edit, it takes up less space on the screen, so even if it's not perfect, it may be useful. Yeah, that I was trying to say I am a leaf on the wind, and it came out Ian a leaf on the wine. Okay, you win some, you lose some. Moving on. Just want to mention, if you don't care about writing at all, if you don't care about taking photos or drawing or typing, you just want a recording of someone's voice, there are plenty of apps that do that. One of them, this first one, I don't know if it's pronounced Dictamus or Dictamus or whatever, but that one is a digital approximation of a real dictaphone. So if you work with a live human transcriptionist, that's the one you want. If you don't, the other ones are a lot cheaper. Okie dokie. So that's the taking notes portion. So you have your iPad, you're in a meeting or a lecture or something, you're taking notes. Now let's move on to the next category, which is what I'm calling the text editors. So if you have a blog, say a WordPress blog, if you happen to write for Macworld magazine or, I don't know, Tidbits, or almost any other modern publication, you may have run across this thing called Markdown. So Markdown is really cool. It's a markup language invented by John Gruber. And basically it works like this. You're typing along in plain text, just letters and punctuation, no styles, no indents, no funny stuff at all. Plain text that you can create in any app in the world. And you come along, you want something to be bold, hey, put a couple of asterisks around it. And when it's published, that turns into bold. You want something to be italic, you put, you know, one asterisk on each side. There are tags that you use just ordinary everyday punctuation for that can turn things into URLs and bulleted lists and headings and all sorts of other stuff. Markdown is great because you can use any app in the world to write in Markdown, and once it's published, you get all the nice styles and formatting. Now, there are a whole bunch of apps, and I'm going to give you a few examples here, that have two characteristics in common. Number one, they're great editors for Markdown, which means that they don't just let you type plain text and put the Markdown tags in, because of course you can do that with anything, but they'll also show you a preview of how your Markdown text will look once it's published. And secondly, they connect to your Dropbox, so you can start creating one of these documents on your Mac and continue it on your iPad, then continue it later on your iPhone. They all sync together and it's really beautiful. So I'll just give you an example of one of these. It's one that I like quite a bit. It's called WriteUp. There we go. So here is an article that I wrote for Macworld on editing Excel files on your iPad. And as you can see, I wrote it in plain text and round about here, round about this line here, I wanted this to be a heading. So all I did was I put three dashes underneath it. Now when you tap here to preview it as it would finally be published, any line of text with three dashes underneath it turns into a heading. And so you can see there are URLs that become active and other sorts of formatting. But I can type that without having to worry about what text editor I use. So WriteUp is great because it syncs with your Dropbox. You can have little lists, you know, here's a list of movies I want to see, or any just sort of little notes to yourself, or even longer. I mean, I write entire essays in here, and that way I can move from device to device without having to worry where I stopped when I was writing. So WriteUp is probably my current favorite in this general category. Now, if you are a programmer, and by programmer I mean to be inclusive, you could be a web developer, you could be just doing HTML or CSS, you might want something a little bit heavier duty, and by heavier duty I mean something that can do syntax coloring and automatic indentation and balancing braces and brackets and parentheses and telling you when you've got a formula spelled wrong, all those sorts of things. For that you might want one of these text editors. Now, I noticed that we're running a little bit later than where we would like to be time-wise, so I'm not going to demonstrate this for you, but there are links in your show notes that you will receive shortly. All of these apps are really great at doing text editing. I have Diet Coda I use for certain things, and I use Textastic for some things. If you are doing coding on an iPad, these are all good choices. I also would be remiss if I didn't mention Text Expander. So with Text Expander, you know, I wrote a book on DevonThink Pro. Book on DevonThink, but I was frequently mentioning DevonThink Pro Office. I didn't want to have to write out DevonThinkPro Office every time I came across that phrase, so I just typed DTPO, and Text Expander magically turned it into DevonThinkPro Office. Now, the iOS does have text expansion built in, but it's kind of primitive, and Text Expander is way better. It can do a lot more and a lot more, it can do multi-line paragraphs, and it can do variables and all sorts of cool things. So definitely check out Text Expander if you're going to do any amount of typing on your iPad. Another one, Type It For Me Touch. All right. The last category of stuff I want to talk about is Office applications. And when I say Office applications, I mean Microsoft Office, like Microsoft Word, Microsoft Excel, Microsoft PowerPoint. A lot of us have to not only do word processing, we have to actually work with Microsoft Word because we're going to get a Word file from somebody else, and we have to mess with it and then give it back to a third person, and that whole process has to be seamless. There has to be no question at all about losing stuff in translation. We have to actually generate and edit Word documents, and the same thing with Excel and with PowerPoint. So I want to talk about what your options are in dealing with those sorts of Office documents. Now, first, I'm just going to say this. There has been a rumor that Microsoft is going to come out with Office for the iPad. And in fact, there was a recent report on The Verge that makes it seem pretty convincing that this is probably maybe going to happen in like March of next year. Microsoft hasn't sort of come right out and said they're going to do it, but it sounds likely. It also sounds likely that when they do it, you will only be able to view the documents in the free version, and you'll have to pay a subscription fee to actually edit them, which seems weird to me because you can already view Microsoft Office documents on an iPad without any other software, but Microsoft, who knows. So this might happen. In the meantime, you have some other options. There are basically four paths you can follow. Number one, you can use Apple's iWork applications. And they're all very good. They will all import and export the corresponding Microsoft Office formats. But there's just one little catch. I mean, Pages. I love Pages. I use Pages every day. It's a great word processor. But the iOS version doesn't have as many features as the Mac version does. Now, a couple of days ago, there was an update, and it got a few more features, but still not as many. Now I can do change tracking. I'm very happy about change tracking. Still, when I bring in a Pages document from my Mac or a Word document from my Mac into Pages on my iPad, I lose stuff. I lose comments, I lose formatting, I lose fonts. That means when they go back out, they're still lost. So that's a little bit uncool. Same thing with Numbers and Keynote. Now, if you are going to be living entirely within Apple's universe, no worries at all. These are great products. If you have to share files with other people, you might want to go down another path. You could use Google Docs. Google Docs is great. You have a word processor, spreadsheet, presentation tool right in your web browser. The problem is, it doesn't work well in the iPad's web browser. Whether you're using Safari or a third-party browser, Google Docs in a browser on an iPad kind of sucks. It's very feature-limited. Now, you can get Google Drive, which is a free app from Google, that gives you better editing of Google Docs on your iPad. Still not great. It's still a very limited version of the feature set. And you can only edit documents that have been converted to Google Docs format, not the original Microsoft Office format, but it's a step in the right direction. Third path is you can use a third-party Office tool. Now, I've written about tools for editing Word files and Excel files and PowerPoint files on an iPad for Macworld. There are links to those articles in the show notes. And basically what it comes down to is there are these five third-party suites. The ones that I've marked with an asterisk, so Documents2Go Premium, Office Squared HD, and QuickOffice Pro HD, what they all have in common is this principle of first do no harm. So they don't do what Pages and Numbers do. That is, they don't strip out stuff when you import and strip out more stuff when you export. When you get a Word document into, let's say, Office Squared, even if Office Squared doesn't have some feature that figures into this document, it will leave well enough alone, and when you export it, that thing is still there. So that's really cool. So if you want to preserve integrity when you're passing documents back and forth with other people, one of those three asterisked apps is probably what you want. Now, there is a fourth path, and I'm just going to mention briefly, as a sort of teaser, when we get to the third show, I'm going to be talking about ways in which you can run the full Windows or Mac versions of apps on your iPad after a fashion. You can do it. It's not the greatest experience, but I'll just give you a preview. It can be done. Because I know that if I don't say this, somebody's going to ask me. Yes, I know. I know. We're getting to that. Now, my particular recommendations. In terms of word processing, I like Pages the best as a standalone word processor on the iPad. But if you need that that cross-device compatibility, I would go with Office Squared. It is my favorite of those ones that have that capability. For spreadsheets, very much the same story. Numbers is a great tool in and of itself, but if you need to share Excel files, Office Squared is a great alternative. Except for charts. It doesn't do charts. I don't know why it doesn't do charts, but it doesn't do charts. So if your Excel spreadsheets involve charts, you don't want Office Squared, you want Polaris Office. And Polaris Office is great at charts. It's not so great at some of the other things. Sorry. Now, you might expect that I will say the same thing about presentations. Sorry, I skipped over a slide there, but I know it was on it. I didn't skip over a slide. I had a cognitive breakdown. Excuse me. So I was just going to... This is live, you know, we're not editing this. All right. I just wanted to mention, spreadsheets are at the end of math on an iPad. You can have simple calculators like Digits and CalcBot that are great. Like they're like adding machines plus, plus, plus. And if you need to do scientific or technical or, you know, astronomical calculations, Wolfram Alpha is a fantastic app. Search for these in the App Store or check the show notes. All right, so presentations. There's Keynote, and that's it, really. I've used every app that does presentations, either lets you create them or edit them or show them on an iPad, and I'm telling you, nothing is even in the ballpark of Keynote. Nothing comes close. Keynote is so far and away the best. It's just use Keynote. I'm telling you, just use Keynote. I've been using Keynote this whole time. So we're in Keynote right here. And I started this presentation on a Mac, then I moved it over and I made a lot of edits on my iPad. So you can see, just like on a Mac, you scroll through your slides, you can select, you know, different ones, and you have so many formatting options. You can add shapes and graphics and deal with formatting, and you can add animations and transitions and all this kind of stuff. It's a very powerful tool. Again, not quite as powerful as what is on the Mac, but pretty darn good. I am sorry that I had to rush so much and that I had to skip over so many things, but I want to remind you that the show notes have everything that I wished I could have said but didn't have time for, links to everything I did talk about, and reminders of all the points I made. So please go consult those if you want any more information on this stuff. And of course, there will be another opportunity to do some overflow in the next presentations. But first, I would like to ask, what questions have come up during today's show?
All right. Thank you, Joe. We'll have a number of questions coming up, and please, if you have any more, ask them in the live chat. But that's it for our prepared presentation, so if you need to get back to work, thanks for watching. Remember, you can come back anytime to watch the rest of this Q&A session or any other bits you may have missed. Now, our first question. Do the foldable keyboards you mentioned break more easily because do the wires keep getting bent?
I only have one of them. I have the Matias. I have never had it break on me. Now, the thing about folding keyboards, so there are two things. Number one, obviously they don't have as much structural rigidity as one of these. So if you do this, you know, if you try to flex it, you are pressing your luck. If you have a two-year-old, all bets are off. I'm speaking from experience. And if you want to use them on your lap, not so good, because they have a tendency to, I mean, the hinge is in the middle, right? So they buckle when they're sitting on your lap. So they are best used when you have a tabletop, and your goal is just to have a wider keyboard that doesn't take up so much length in a carrying case. That's really what they're optimal for. You know, I haven't had one break on me, but they are intrinsically more fragile than full-size keyboards.
So the one thing I would add to that is that I've known Edgar Matthias and the people at that company for years and years and years, and I've looked at a ton of their keyboards. And while all keyboards actually take kind of a lot of abuse, and folding keyboards, I'm sure, take a lot more, I've had really good luck with them just fixing whatever the problem is. So, check the warranty on the keyboards, and you know, if it breaks in the meantime, I'm sure they'll replace it. Now,
I had
most other companies too.
A Matthias desktop keyboard that was out of warranty, and I like pressed on it too hard, and one of the plastic legs on the back broke off, and I emailed their tech support. They're like, oh, no problem, we'll just send you a new one in the mail. And it just showed up. I was like, wow, nice. So, yeah, good company.
Okay. A couple of questions here, and I realize this is somewhat getting ahead of ourselves, but we can probably foreshadow another one of the shows. But one of the problems that people are running into is sort of dealing with too many apps. You know, you're trying to get work done. You got 17 apps to do this stuff. Do you have any quick tips? And I know you'll be covering more of this in a future show, but do you have any quick tips about how people can just do better as far as managing a lot of apps and moving between them effectively?
Yeah, well, okay. My first tip is, to the extent possible, only use apps that support Dropbox. Now, I'm going to tell you, I showed you that category of apps that's like plain text, markdown editors sort of things. All of those tie into Dropbox, and tons of other apps do. Whether it's plain text or whether you are using a sort of common universal format like .doc or .xls or what have you, if you keep your files in a Dropbox folder that is accessible to all those different apps that you're using, you will significantly reduce the pain of switching amongst them. Now, there is always, of course, the risk of, you know, app A won't support a feature or a capability that app B has. But for me, once I had this realization that most of my work can be done in plain text and those plain text files can be stored in Dropbox, it was like when I switched from POP to IMAP for email. All of a sudden, it didn't matter what tool I was using anymore. I downloaded six or seven plain text editors, and I sometimes wouldn't even remember which app I was using. It didn't matter which one I was using, because they all just sort of worked. Now, obviously, the farther you get away from plain text, the less true that story is, but that's sort of the beginning of my answer. You were going to say, Adam?
I was going to say that the other thing I was going to say is that there's also iCloud, of course, for some of these things. But
iCloud doesn't do that. iCloud lets you switch back and forth between iOS devices, or sometimes between the Mac and iOS version of a single app, but it doesn't help you when you want to switch between, you know, Pages and Office Squared, or between Goodreader and iBooks. It doesn't cross apps, which who doesn't hate that? That was what it was supposed to do. That's what iDisk did. Ugh, Apple. Sorry. But getting a little worked up here, because that should have worked. Anyway. So anyway, that's part of my answer. I have also learned to be somewhat ruthless. So when I notice that I'm using a certain app in a given category for, you know, a few days or a week, and I keep coming back to that, I will just go and delete the other apps in that category, again, assuming that I still have access to their data in some fashion, because I don't like clutter. I don't like having to make choices when I've decided. No, actually, this, you know, I know that every app is different and they're all great for different things. But no, I'm kind of always using write-up, so I might as well just delete the others and deal. Now, I'm fibbing a little bit because I have every Office app in the world installed on my iPad because I'm always writing articles about them and I'm always having to switch back and forth and compare. But I keep them in like different folders. I want to keep the stuff that I actually know I like and use sort of topmost and frontmost. I know that's kind of not even really an answer to your question. There, all these apps overlap in weird and fuzzy ways with regard to their feature sets. But all I can tell you is, number one, use Dropbox where you can. Number two, stick with common file formats when you can. And number three, once you find something that you're happy with, just delete the others. You can always get them back if you need them.
Okay. A few people in the chat are actually talking about an office service that they found they really like called Cloud On. Have you seen Cloud On?
Show number three. That's what I was foreshadowing. Okay. So Cloud On, right? You asked. Cloud On is this thing that gives you Windows on your iPad. Ooh, the actual Microsoft Office. I mean, Microsoft Office, the actual Microsoft Office for Windows running on your iPad. Isn't that great? Well, it's okay. It's a cool trick, and it does let you edit Office apps without any danger of losing formatting at all. And there are sort of several services like that. Cloud On is one of them. I'll talk about a few others. You can run Internet Explorer for Windows on your iPad. Isn't that amazing? Ew, yuck. But you can do it. The problem is that these aren't native apps. What they're doing is showing you basically a window into a virtual server somewhere else. And so the problem is, number one, it's kind of laggy. Number two, you have to have an always-on high-speed internet connection. If your connection goes down, everything goes poof. And you're not going to get the same sorts of controls and flexibility that you get with native iPad apps. I think of these things as a neat trick and as a Band-Aid. And I will show them to you and talk about them more in the third show. But I just don't... I mean, I've used them, and I'm like, I don't like this experience. It's not as good. So I'm not a huge fan.
Okay. One last question, unless something comes in quickly. Do you have any... I know this doesn't affect you personally, but do you have any thoughts or any references regarding keyboard entry and overlays and people who are vision impaired using the iPad? It's not a topic I've heard about, so.
I don't know. I would tend to say that... So here's the problem with the overlays. You have to get your iPad into the right state to use them. So in other words, they will only work when there is a virtual keyboard on the screen behind them, and that means you have to be in the right app, in the right spot in the app, and tapped in the right place to be able to use that for it to be able to work. And that could be kind of tricky to do if you're visually impaired. Now, I would tend to say that for people with vision problems, dictation or any sort of speech recognition in combination with Apple's voiceover feature might be sort of a better way to go. I guess a keyboard overlay is really no worse than an external keyboard in terms of you still have to be in the right place in the app. And if you can get to the right place in the app, I suppose that ought to be okay. But I just don't have experience with that, so I can't say very, very well.
Okay. And one last question, I think, which is that we've talked about Dropbox. We mentioned iCloud briefly. But are there any other ways of moving files back and forth between your Mac and your iPad when you're working in these writing apps or note-taking apps or whatever?
And how? if only there were an item about that in the outline for, I don't know, the next presentation. Yes, there are lots of ways. I mentioned Dropbox because it's the most popular and it's one that I use the most and it's very, very good. There are apps that will connect to almost any other sort of cloud-based syncing and sharing network you can think of. There are apps that connect to Box and to, you know, Google Docs and to SugarSync and, you know, the whole long list of these cloud-based services. If there is some other service that you like and the apps that you want to use tie into it, hey, great. The thing about Dropbox is that it's the most universal. So that's really the killer feature for me is that if an app supports only one network, that's the one it'll be. I don't have anything against the other services. It's just kind of Dropbox got there first. So.
Okay. Well, that wraps it up for this first show of Take Control Live, Working with Your iPad. Thanks to Joe for sharing so many great technical details and to everyone who asked questions before and during the show. Again, we'll be updating the Season Pass PDF with all the notes and links that Joe discussed in the show very soon, and we'll send you email when it's available for download, so don't worry if you can't remember how to spell penultimate. Our next show is scheduled for Saturday, January 12th, also at 1 p.m. Eastern. We'll see you then. Thanks.